Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is Wednesday, August 20th, 2003. Today's session is entitled Congregations as Creators of Justice, Session 3 of Creating Congregations of Reconciliation and Missions in a Multicultural World, presented by David Wingard, number WAD 2003-03. Let's listen in.
The key pieces for our congregations in order to bring about the healing of the world is we need to be congregations that do acts of justice. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And so I'm ready to begin session 3 of David Wingard, and you can start taping. And my title is Congregations as Creators of Justice, Finding Our Public Voice. I think it's important to just start out to hear from you. How do you understand what justice is? How do you understand justice? What's it mean for you?
Do we define that for ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, what is, when we throw out the word justice, what does that mean for you?
Fairness.
Okay, fairness.
Equality.
Equality. Okay. For me, the Bible verse is love your neighbor as you love yourself. That you work on behalf of the neighbor to have what you have. And that's when I think of justice. Any other ideas of what justice means for you? Would you say right now, as you think about your congregation and your congregation's life, do you consider yourself to be doing acts of justice? Of working so that there's fairness and equality in your community or in your neighborhood. What do you think?
Well, we do some things at Prince Peace. We always have this place where you donate food for the food shelf.
Okay.
And right. We're doing really well with that.
Right.
We've had programs where we collected money for the community food shelf.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Definite forms of justice. Did people see the Jonathan Frerichs thing with Iraq and all the bundles of quilts from Lutheran World Relief? I think of that as a tremendous sign of justice, of caring for those who haven't been cared for. I think that's fabulous. I would be willing to say that our congregations are incredibly gifted at doing that kind of justice, which I label acts of charity. But when it comes to doing the other kind of justice, acts of advocacy to change the systems, that's where we have fallen, I think, short. And why that is, I don't know, but we just didn't get there. One of the ways that, and I bet you've heard this, and it's such an overused illustration, but I think it's a good one, is most of the time we spend our time dragging the drowning out of the river rather than going upstream and finding out what's pushing them in. And I think that's when we talk about biblical justice, I think that's what's being talked about, is the Holy Spirit calling us to get upstream and figure out what's going on that's causing people to drown and to act upon it.
Sometimes they draw the differentiation, people draw the differentiation between, in the Good Samaritan story, binding up the wounds, or try to get better police protection for the highway.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yep. Or the other one too was it about teaching a person to fish?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that. Okay. So that's the sort of justice that I'm going to have us talk about today. is that sort of justice. So what I want us to do to just get going is, the theme verse for this summer. You remember it?
Luke
4, 17 through 18. This is Jesus' definition of justice.
Do you have a memorized?
The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to preach good news to the poor and recovery of sight to the blind. And then I don't have quite the rest, but to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. That's Jesus' justice. When we talk about justice, that's justice. Okay. Great story, one of my favorites in the book of Acts. So turn to Acts chapter 16. And we're going to begin by reading verses 16 through 24. Now, if you're looking at that, just two things for you to think about. It is by doing justice that healing occurs. And the other reason why doing justice is important to us in our congregations is because doing justice makes us relevant in our neighborhoods and in our cities. We need to do justice because justice makes us relevant to those who live around us. We are a part of their daily life when we are doing justice. Okay. So if somebody would begin by reading Acts chapter 16, verses 16 through 24.
One day as we were going to the place of prayer, we met a slave girl who had a spirit of divination and brought her owners a great deal of money by fortune telling. While she followed Paul and us, she would cry out, "These men are slaves of the Most High God, who proclaim to you a way of salvation." She kept doing this for many days, but Paul, very much annoyed, turned and said to the Spirit, "I order you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her." And he came out in that very hour. But when her owners saw that their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace before the authorities. When they had brought them before the magistrates, they said, "These men are disturbing our city. They are Jews and are advocating customs that are not lawful for us as Romans to adopt or observe." The crowd joined in attacking them, and the magistrates had stripped off their clothing and ordered them to be beaten with rods. After they had given them a severe flogging, they threw them into prison and ordered the jailer to keep them securely. Following these instructions, he put them in the innermost cell and fastened their feet in the stocks. About midnight, Paul and Silas are praying and singing hymns.
Okay, go ahead, you can stop right there.
Okay.
And then we'll catch up the rest of the story later. It's a great story, this story about justice and what leads to justice. But first to start out, take a look at the story again. What is making Paul and Silas angry?
Their abuse of the woman.
Okay, whose abuse of the woman?
The slave owners, magistrate, her owners.
Okay.
Wasn't he just annoyed by what she was saying? That's what I heard.
Well, he was, yeah, there was definite annoyance by what, so he's annoyed at the slave, the woman doing acts of divination, but he's really annoyed at those who are sending her out. What are they using her for?
Make money.
To make money. I mean, they are taking advantage of this poor woman in order to make money. And it really made him mad. I mean, it really made him mad. What was making, in this story, the owners angry? Why were they angry at Paul and Silas? Because why?
They took away their money maker.
took away a pretty lucrative source of income for them. Why else would they have been angry? I mean, just think about it. It may not be written exactly in Scripture, but what else would make them angry?
By what authority did they come?
Right. Who are you, this Paul and Silas? We are the ones in power here. You know, by whose name do you come to us and presume to be angry with us? And so there's anger in the story. A lot of anger. Paul is very angry at them, and they're angry at Paul. But thus far in the story, who's holding the power? Who's got the power in this first section? Pardon?
The masters.
The masters do. They're the ones who got the power. But we'll see who wins in the end. But anger is an incredible motivator. And one of the things that we need to do as congregations is to get in touch with that which makes us angry. Do you think of anger as a positive or a negative?
Yes.
Yes, I know. I mean, the last thing, doesn't it seem like the last thing we should be doing in our congregations is to get people angry? Okay? But anger is an incredible motivator, especially when it comes around justice. I think in other words, a couple other words that I'd like to add in terms of anger is grief or sadness. So what I want to do is have you reflect a little bit with me and with one another. As you look at your neighborhood or your community in which you live or our country or the world, get into your gut. What's making you angry?
Well, the war made me really angry, but that wasn't a unanimous position in our congregation. So I had to sit there and shiver and keep my
Why?
Well, because I didn't want to do something that would polarize the congregation.
Okay, so you chose to do nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. What else makes you angry going on out there?
The plight of the Palestinians.
Okay. Now what I want you to do is focus on in your community. What's making you angry in your community in terms of justice or injustice?
They want to build a $34 million bridge from our island to a neighboring island where about 7 individuals hold the land. And they stand to earn a lot of money, but it happens to be that probably half of those men sit on the borough assembly, and they want to push the bridge through. And
Well, won't you benefit from that bridge?
No, I see it as a great waste, because after the federal government kicks in their highway dollars, then I have to maintain it with my money, and then my housing property value plummets, and we spend a lot of our money on a bridge where if we already have a ferry system going over to that bridge, I mean going over to that island, and I think it's a waste.
So, from what I hear you saying, it's a decision that will benefit a few, but hurt many?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What other stuff is making you angry in your communities?
So many of the young people are into meth, drugs.
Okay.
And it's kind of burning the brains.
Why does that make you angry?
Well, I've got a cousin that's son is, he can't find his way, because he's, and he's kind of halfway between, the judge has to decide if he's going to go to prison or if he's going to go, you know, just checking in every once in a while. And the court systems are so busy that I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And there's, you hear a lot of other people too, they have the same problem.
Okay. So it's affecting your family.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And his mother.
Okay.
Dad.
Yep. What else makes you angry out in your communities?
Well, in Minnesota, you know this, there's a budget deficit in the state that's being balanced on the backs of poor mental health programs.
Yeah, it's
education.
Not just in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But let me go after you a little bit. I mean, I know enough about your life. You're not poor.
No.
So why are you angry about it?
In my job, I work with the workers that see those, at least the economic assistance cases every day, and I'm constantly hearing stories about people that are going from very little to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I find irritating about it is many of those stories aren't getting very much press.
Okay. Okay. So you're angry because it's affecting. When people we care about get hurt, it makes us angry, doesn't it? And what even makes us more angry is when we've been hurt. When injustice has been done to us in some way or another. Out of no decision on our own. So anger is an essential motivator for us to move forward into acts of justice. Paul was mad. He was just plain mad. And I think it's important is to understand where our anger comes from. I mean, why do you care so much about this bridge?
I care about the desecration of the island itself. I care about the fact of because I think that it's going to cost me more money.
Okay.
And I think it's wasteful. I see that it's wasteful in the sense that we already have a solution with the ferry. And why do we need to spend so much money on a huge bridge to a place that I would rather see stay wild?
Right. Are there other people in your community as angry about it as you are?
Yes, it's polarizing our community.
Is there a group meeting together?
I think that there are groups meeting to stop.
What's your church doing?
Our church takes no position.
Hmm. Okay. Are some of the seven members of your church?
No.
Okay. So why won't they take a position on it?
I think in the history of our church, because our town is so small, they don't like to take a position on.
So things just happen in Ketchikan, and people just get more and more frustrated because they've been left out of the loop.
I would say probably what the history of our pastor is he speaks.
Well, the church isn't the pastor, it's you folks.
Okay.
So I'm just pushing you a little bit here. Don't blame it on your pastor. I mean, what I'm using you is to just try to. We got to get in really motivated by our anger and not keep looking to other people to solve the problems out there. We got to stop the blaming and start taking responsibility. And we as a congregations are the best people to do that.
So if there's two sides of the issue, and I, as a lay member of my congregation, want to stand up and say, I think this is an act of injustice because I read Acts to say X, Y, and Z, And I think this is an example of that, and I think we should go against the bridge, and I want everybody to stand together with me in that.
It may be that what we request in our congregations is that we as the body of Christ sit down and have a conversation about this. It's happening in our coffee shops. It's happening in our parking lots after worship, right?
Yeah.
But why can't we do it within the midst of the body?
Yeah, why? I remember there was, I can't remember the issue, but I brought it up in our circle one time, and I said, we really need to, as a church, get active. Oh, we don't deal with politics in our church. I mean, it was just, man, I was shut down.
Right. But if we take what Jesus says in Luke 4 seriously, we gotta deal with politics, because politics is life, where everything... Politics is about relationships, and all of our lives are a framework of relationships. That's what politics is. So we're called to be involved in that.
The extreme right-wing people, they're
very well organized. Yep. And we sit on our hands.
Right.
But we don't have to. I mean, we have tremendous power. Okay.
I have a question. What if there's a split in your congregation? If there are people that want the bridge and people don't want, that causes a split in her congregation. If she tries to get it resolved in the congregation.
When justice, and we're going to move on to this, when justice is rightly worked, the splits become places of major healing. And we'll, as we move through the story, we'll get to that. I think what a congregation does, it needs to be the motivator in the community to find which that is the most just solution to a community problem. The congregation needs to be the place where these conversations occur. Both sides coming together to talk over issues, to understand, to listen. A really fancy name for it is moral discernment. That's what we can do in our congregations, is that sort of piece.
And just kind of create that safe environment for honest discourse.
Right.
And this could be a local issue, an international issue, or somewhere in between?
I like to say that we can best bring about the healing of the world. We're better equipped to do it in our neighborhoods than across the globe. But if we as a whole church came together around an international issue, just imagine. But I think we as the congregations, I believe congregations are called by God to care for the community in which they exist. That's our priority. That's why God's put us there. That's why we're on that piece of real estate, is to care for that. So the first thing about doing acts of justice is to find out what's making you angry out there. And as we talked about yesterday, is do listening of other people in your congregation to find out what's making them angry. And because it's so easy for us to say, we think this situation should be better, but if it doesn't make us angry, we're not going to do anything about it. I mean, a simple thing for me is... I think what's happening in the farm, and what's happening with our mid-sized family farms in this country is just awful. I know it's awful, but I got to tell you the truth, it's not making me angry. Because I don't live in a rural community, I live urban, and my Rainbow Foods always seems to have enough food. So I can sign petitions probably. But will I go to that next step? Am I angry enough to actually take some risks around it? No. You know? But boy, there's other issues where you can be like a mother bear. So you got to find those issues where you get turned into a mother bear with cubs. Okay. So that's the first thing we got to do in our congregations, is really get in touch with is making us angry or sad or grieving us greatly. One of the things I want us to do in, as we think about anger, is to look up Ephesians chapter 4, verses 25 through 29. And this is what speaks to great scripture when you talked about, well, are we to divide our congregations? And I think the anger that Paul talks about and the kind of anger that Paul has flies in the face of that. So look up Ephesians chapter 4, verses 25 through 29.
So then, putting away falsehood, let all of us speak the truth to our neighbors, for we are members of one another. Be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger. And do not make room for the devil. Thieves must give up stealing. Rather, let them labor and work honestly with their own hands so as to have something to share with the needy. Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up as there is a need, so that your words may give grace to those who hear.
Okay, and this is a great tension for me, is because isn't Paul saying that anger can be used to build up a community instead of tear it apart? Do you ever think about anger in that way? Holy anger? That's what I like to call it, holy anger. Where it doesn't judge others. I mean, it doesn't. It wouldn't look at the seven and say, you're bad people. But you're angry because how it's going to affect those whom you care about, or that which you love, and that which you think would be unjust. It's a different kind of anger. It's an anger that takes the opposition very seriously. And what does it say we see in the other?
See grace.
We see what?
Isn't it grace?
Yeah. And so you see in the opponent grace and as another part of the body of Christ, or as part of God's creation. And when you look at your opponent in that way, it changes your anger. It doesn't soften it, but it seeks that which is good in those whom you are opposed to. It seeks that which is good in whom you are opposed to. And I like that, as you never let the sun set on your anger. I mean, that's really something. It doesn't work for me.
I think one of the difficulties I always had with someone with whom I disagree is I want to demonize them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we do this nationally all the time.
Right.
As well as personally.
Right.
And that dehumanizes them.
Yep.
Instead of dealing with the issue, or they just say, what is it that you, how it affects what you care about.
How many of you have had somebody come to you who is angry and wants to sit down and have a hardcore talk about it so that they can understand your position and why you did what you did, with no judgment? It's happened to me a couple times. It's just, it's gorgeous, you know? I am so mad at you, Pastor Wongard. I need to know what is motivating you to do what you're doing. And then I share with them my story, what I am doing. And they listen, and then I listen to what they're doing. And a new relationship is built when we take each other seriously. So that's the sort of anger we got to have. Our congregations need to find its anger. In order for us to do acts of justice, we got to know those things which are making us angry in our communities, and then to act on them. All right. Now, I'll go back into the book of Acts, chapter 16, and then we'll finish reading Acts 25 through 34. with the Ubuntu shirt. You're a great reader. Would you keep going?
Sure.
Tell me your first name. I'm sorry. Tom. You with the Ubuntu shirt. Nice guy. Tom?
Tom. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. Suddenly, there was an earthquake so violent that the foundations of the prison were shaken. And immediately all the doors were opened and everyone's chains were unfastened. When the jailer woke up and saw the prison doors wide open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself, since he supposed that the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted in a loud voice, "Do not harm yourself, for we are all here." The jailer called for lights, and rushing in, he fell down trembling before Paul and Silas. Then he brought them outside and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And they answered, "Believe on the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." They spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all who were in his house. At the same hour of the night, he took them and washed their wounds. Then he and his entire family were baptized without delay. He brought them up into the house and set food before them. And he and his entire household rejoiced that he had become a believer in God.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about that. How did Paul and Silas act upon their anger? What strikes you in there? What did they do?
They prayed and sang.
All right. They prayed and sang. Most definitely. How many do we make our anger or those things which we say are unjust as part of the liturgy of our worship? We have a small piece in the prayers of the church, I suppose, where we pray for what's happening in the Congo or in Afghanistan. But are we in constant prayer and song around the healing of the world? I'm not sure that we are. I mean, but worship is the centerpiece. If we're going to do congregations who do acts of justice, it needs to be part of the centerpiece of how we worship.
I spent a week at the Iona community, and a lot of their music, a lot of their hymnody does that.
Mm-hmm. Remember what we heard last night? Mark Zedio said, "We become the hymns we sing." Isn't it something like that? Yeah. I mean, we become the hymns we sing. And I think as we think about our hymns, are we singing about justice? And I bet if we looked at all of our good old favorite hymns, I bet there's a whole lot of them about justice. But singing those hymns and praying those prayers and being immersed in all of the scriptures about how God cares for the oppressed is a key piece. Okay, what else did they do? Of course, I've done some thinking about this. I'm just going to throw one out that I really like. Is they took on the consequences and were prepared for it. I mean, that's one of the things that, did any of you go through the civil rights training or when you would do public demonstrations? Has anybody done that? Well, anyhow, I have to say I've never been arrested. I've never even been close, but I've done public demonstrations. But one thing you hear is, if you're going to do this, you have to be willing to take the consequences. That's key. Okay? So in other words, if you're going to do acts of justice, if you're going to act on your anger, you better be ready for the consequences. You've got to be prepared for it. You've got to have a plan in mind on how you're going to act. I think Paul and Silas knew very well that by going to these officials and raising Cain with them, they were going to be thrown in jail because the jails were full of people who were suffering because of unjust charges against them. So they were ready for it, I think. and they had a plan of what they were going to do. So we have to know what the consequences are. If we are so firmly convinced in our congregation that many people in the congregation are so firmly convinced that the bridge is going to wreck the community, we have to be prepared for those consequences. We have to be so strategic in how we do it and be prepared. What are we going to do if half the congregation gets really mad at us? How are we going to deal with that? How are we going to take the consequences of our actions and deal with them? And that's, I think, one of the hardest things about doing acts of justice, is realizing that there's going to be some consequences in us stepping out and speaking out. So they were ready. They were ready. Okay, here's another thing that I saw. Where did they go? They went to jail, and who did they hang with in the jail?
The other guys in the
jail. What I wrote simply down is they understood that their power was in the midst of those who were also oppressed. Okay? One of the things that I've learned is we can't do things on behalf of others. I mean, we can try as much as we want, but we're not going to get the poor more food. We have to work in the midst of the poor and strengthen them and encourage them to join together in solidarity to do it. Because they're the ones who are angry about being hungry, not us. So they knew that their power was with those who were in the jail with them. That's who they hung with. That's who they built relationships with. And they sang and they prayed together and they shared their faith. They did that. Then the other thing is, oh, my eyes are getting so bad. Okay, let's read on from verses 35 through 39 of Acts chapter 16. 35 through 39. I love this part of the story. Somebody read that? Go ahead, Tom.
When morning came, the magistrates sent the police saying, "Let these men go." And the jailer reported the message to Paul saying, "The magistrates sent word to let you go. Therefore come out now and go in peace." But Paul replied, "They have beaten us in public, uncondemned men who are Roman citizens, and have thrown us into prison. And now are they going to discharge us in secret? Certainly not. Let them come and take us out themselves." The police reported these words to the magistrates, and they were afraid when they heard that they were Roman citizens. So they came and apologized to them. And they took them out and asked them to leave the city. After leaving the prison, they went to Lydia's home.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. So what do you make of the ending of the story? I mean, gee, they got free. What's he doing? I mean, why didn't he just take the fastest car out of there? No, what does Paul do?
Make a statement.
Why?
Proclaim to the people in the town the power that happens with making a stand,
right,
and taking the consequence.
Yep.
Why didn't he want to have more of a lasting effect too? I mean, if these guys can just sort of dismiss them and off they
yep.
go, then they've sort of they're going, we dodged that bullet, but nobody knows
mm-hmm.
about it. And now he makes it public, and they realize that if they do this again, they're putting themselves in a bad position.
He held the public leaders accountable for their actions and made it public. Huge step in doing justice is holding our leaders, our officials, holding them accountable for what they are supposed to do and making it public if they are or if they aren't. Huge part of doing justice.
Another part of that, I think, too, is using the laws that exist.
Yep.
In the civil rights movement,
yep.
We did that all the time.
Yep. Remember that part about in the scripture about you got to be as wily as serpents? To do justice, to be about justice, you have to be wily as serpent and gentle as lambs. I mean, you really do. So there's huge pieces, I think, in this story for us to think about as our congregations move towards active justice. First and foremost, what's making us angry? Angry enough that we're willing to go to one more meeting about it, something. Angry enough that our stomach hurts when we think about it. Angry enough that we're willing to step out and suffer consequences because of it. It's got to be done together. Your anger about the bridge isn't going to do anything. But if there's 100 people angry about the bridge or 200 people, it's amazing what can happen.
I think maybe implied in that is this, but maybe as he said, get the facts.
Yep, get the facts. Yep.
Because sometimes we get all excited in our little town. Get all excited about something and people don't have the facts.
Yep. Got to do your research really well. And then what was the outcome of all this? Who was set free in all of this?
The jailer.
The oppressor was set free. The oppressed were set free. Paul was set free. Silas was set free. Isn't it so interesting we never hear again what happened to the girl? I mean, that's the thing that strikes me. That's why they went in jail. But something else happened when we were there. They found another issue to cut. You know? And that was to take on these civic officials who are abusing people. They abused the woman and they were abusing Paul and Silas. And that was enough of that. But everybody, when justice is done, everybody's set free. Even the oppressor is set free. That's God's justice. And that's the sort of justice that really excites me. When those who see that they are the oppressor comes to realize that freedom for them and new life isn't changing. I just think of like what got into the, was it the governor of Illinois to release all of the, what, I mean, I wonder what Paul and Silas got to him, you know, or what was a conservative governor in the South, I can't remember the state, who all of a sudden said, we're going to raise taxes. I mean, man, I mean, this stuff is going on all the time out there. And when justice is done, everybody is set free and knows new life. Okay, I'm just going to run through just a step-by-step on some for you to think about in how a congregation gets going on doing an act of justice or cutting an issue. And then I'm going to finish with giving you a brief example of a congregation who's done it, and then it'll be pretty darn close to eating salmon time. And we're not going to be late for that. Not that I don't enjoy the lentil loaf, but... You know, this is a sidebar, but I'm a hardcore carnivore. I mean, I'll admit that. And I know the risks of coming up here. I know that. But that night we had the lentil loaf, I was really hungry. When I sat down, I said to myself, that's the most beautiful meatloaf I've ever seen. Didn't it look just like a meatloaf and there was ketchup there? And so the table that I was sitting at was right in front of me, and instead of allowing other people to eat first, I decided I'd get my share first. So I took off about an inch slab and jabbed ketchup on there, and then Maury Wee says, and it's a vegan meal tonight. Oh, no. Well, and of course, at Holden, you're not supposed to waste anything, so there I was. Well, I was, I guess I suffered the consequences of an ill thought out action.
But the ketchup helps.
The ketchup helps. Okay. Here's what we got to do as congregations. Find out what is making people angry and why. And that's not only in your congregation, but outside in your community. Yes?
What I struggle with is that in my congregation, what makes people angry is the condition of the country roads around them.
Okay.
Rather than the treatment of Hispanics who are the working force in nearby community.
Okay. So then, we got to figure out why that's making them angry, these country roads. What does it say? It talks about, doesn't it talk about neglect? Okay. A system that's neglecting them. Okay. And we're always motivated out of our own self-interest. Mm-hmm. And I think when you can get people who are angry about city roads, they'll ready to fight that battle, and then they're ready to go on to the next one. So it may not be this altruistic sort of notion, but it's anger. Mm-hmm. And we can use that anger to do good. So that's how I respond to that. Yes?
I just got one quick question. What about our congregation in the city?
Right.
And we've got members that come from quite a ways farther out. So there's a congregation, there isn't...
Why aren't they living where your congregation is?
I don't know.
Is it because it's crime,
I think it's history. I mean, I think a lot of these people used to live in the area, then they moved out, away, and we're not obviously attracting... I've just been a member for a couple of years, so
right.
I don't know that whole history. But then I think we're not attracting a lot of new members.
Right, yeah. And that's a really good question. And I think we'd have to have a lot deeper conversation about that.
I wouldn't mind having that with you.
Okay.
I'm the new member or the new chairperson of the Social Justice Committee, and they haven't even had anything going.
Okay. Well, let's have that conversation.
Okay.
And I'll give you some ideas on how to get going on that.
Good.
Okay. So this is the first thing you do. Is figure out what's making people angry or sad. And maybe it's some sort of change in the community. I mean, I don't know what it could be. Maybe it's about the treatment of the elderly. Maybe it's about what's happening at the school close to the church. Maybe it's about the roads. I mean, it can very well be the roads and what that's doing. So you find that piece, what's going on there. Then you got to research the problem. Because, like Tom said it best, usually we blow things way out of proportion, so we better be darn sure that we are very well versed in, and we know what we're talking about. And so you do research, you get statistics, you do a whole lot of talking. The other thing that you need to do, we need to do, are cut issues that's winnable. For instance, we may be angry that there are 30 million near starvation in Ethiopia, but that's not an issue our congregation's going to win. Okay? But we may be able to win another issue, and that is, you know that, at least in Minnesota, and I would imagine where you live too, food shelf usage is way, way up, and our food shelves are bare. I mean, so maybe there's an issue around that locally that we can win. Maybe it's going to Super Value or whatever and saying, look, we know your profit margin here. If you would be willing to give this amount of food to our food shelf, we'll shop with you. I mean, so you find something that's winnable. And what I mean winnable is that both sides get something out of it. That's a key piece in doing justice. That justice needs to be done for both sides. All right. Then you get all ready. And as you do your research, you got to make sure you know who the decision makers are in the community. Who actually has the power? That was one of the things I liked about Paul and Silas. They knew who had the power in that community, and that's who they went after. And that's what we have to be really smart about. And that takes research and thinking and conversation. Who can actually make the decisions? And then we gather the group of people with a specific request or demand to that person who has the power to do something about it. And we frame the request so that it's a win for us and a win for them. Am I making sense? And when I give you an example, I think it'll come clear for you. One of the things that's essential is that we need to hold the decision makers accountable. We ask them, will you do this? And if they say no, and this is where I like this Ephesians text, we can get angry, but we say, tell us why. We want to hear why. So we look for the best in that person. And we push and we push until that person comes clean to us about what the real issue is behind that person's decision. And if the person says, I just can't make that decision right now, we say to them, what can we do to help you make that decision? Key piece. When I go visit legislators over at the state capitol, when my congregation members and I would go over there, we'd make a request. Are you going to support this piece of legislation? And the legislator may say, I don't know. To be perfectly honest with you, I think I'm against it. Can you tell us why you're against it? What are you hearing out there? What is it that we need to do to prove to you that what we think is the way that you need to vote? And they'll tell you that. I need to see more people. Nobody's writing me. I mean, you say it's a big problem, but nobody's calling my office about it. So if you can get phone calls to me so that I can say to my colleagues, look, in my district, my people want me to do this, so I got to vote that way. And so it's almost like a partnership. So you do that. You tell the truth in love. You just tell the truth. Why you're angry about it. Why it's important to you. And then, if you're smart enough, you've chosen an issue that you know you're going to win. And when it's done, you celebrate. And you know what? Even if you don't win the way you want, you still celebrate. I mean, celebration is essential in that. Okay, I'm going to give you a quick example to tell you what I'm talking about here. And my examples are urban examples, but that's all I got right now. There's this church that's 2 miles from my house called St. Matthew's. And St. Matthew's it worships 120 people on a Sunday, on a good Sunday. So it's not what you'd call a big, gigantic church or anything. And it was a church that, just couldn't seem to find its niche, you know? What was its mission or whatever? And they knew that if it was going to survive, they needed to engage the neighborhood. But they didn't know how to do that. Well, anyhow, the pastor there went through this sort of training on how to do acts of justice. And the first thing he did was to go and talk to the neighbors and people in the congregation. What's making you angry in our community or around our church? And the thing that came out was there was an apartment building and prostitution and drugs were happening in that apartment building right close to the church. And they realized then, and as they went and talked to the neighbors, this was the one thing that was really making people mad. And they found out why it was making people mad. And the reason it was making people mad was because it was making the neighborhood dirty, and people didn't like drugs being dealt out of cars in the church parking lot. It just made him mad. And the neighbors didn't like it either. And nobody had ever done anything about it. And so he got the neighbors together with members of his congregation and had a forum to talk about it and said, what do we want to do about it? And people said, well, we don't think the guy should have to get rid of his rental property, just be more careful about who he rents the place to. So they did the research and of course found out that the one who rented, who owned the rental property was an absentee landlord. And this person didn't even know what was going on. And so they invited the owner to come to the church where the neighbors came in and gathered. They talked about the problem. They said, this is what we want you to do in the next 3 months to take care of this problem. And then they said this, we will work with you to make this happen. If you do not do this, we will be in contact with the St. Paul Police and the Housing Authority, whom we know, because they've done their research, whom we know have every right to shut this place down, and you will lose a source of income for it. So he immediately saw a vested self-interest in working with the congregation. In 3 months, the place was cleaned out. New neighbors came in. It invigorated the congregation, it invigorated the community, and the landlord felt really good about what he had done. They finished up by inviting the landlord to their church and having a party for what they had done together to improve the neighborhood. And that's what I'm talking about. They knew it was a winnable issue before they went into it. Relationships were built. All were winners. That's what we can do as congregations. We can really do that. Did everybody in that congregation want to be involved in the issue? By no means. But why should we allow those who don't want to be involved dictate what we do? I think it's an important question for us to think about. Okay, questions?
Do you use the whole anger angle to sidestep the apathy angle or the powerlessness in the sense that if I try the whole steps on, and maybe it's just because I'm more of a minority than I think I am, but when I talk to people and say, well, you know, what can we do? They're like, oh, the borough, they shove it through. You know, there's nothing we can do about it. That whole, and then I think of myself as a mother of a young family going, God, do I really want to, you know, I'm questioning my anger level
right.
To see, do I, to all this research and meetings and cheerleading, you know.
But I hate to say it, if justice is going to come, we got to do that stuff.
I hear it.
Or we can sit back and feel helpless and hopeless.
Yeah.
I don't think that feels as good as actually trying to do something.
Well, that's what the people that want the bridge count on is the apathy, you know.
They do, don't they?
Sure.
Yep.
They just think they're going to get worn out.
Hey, those folks over there haven't said anything about other stuff we've done, you know.
This may be a minor question, but yesterday, you talked about the church-based reorganizing and
right.
Go out and find out what your
yep.
congregation. You didn't use the word anger about that, but that was, it was what did we want to do as a church type of thing.
Right.
But
maybe I'll tell you what one of the questions is what concerns do you have for our neighborhood?
Okay. That didn't come across as anger being
okay.
A good motivator to, or if you use the word anger today in that same situation, it's the way of finding
right.
out what people want
yep.
to do. But
yep, exactly.
Whereas yesterday I was thinking more in terms of where the what can we do? What would you like us to do?
Yeah.
It's just much stronger when you talk about it in terms of finding what the anger is.
Yep. Yeah, and I think a great question is, what deeply concerns you about what's happening in our neighborhood, where our church is, or in the neighborhood where you live?
Dave, you aren't saying, though, that you ignore issues that you don't think you can win. I mean, that doesn't... I mean, there are some... Don't you take on some issues, even if you're not going to win them, because it's the right thing to do?
What I'm saying is that oftentimes we'll take on issues that we know aren't going to win, that we aren't going to win, but we already have the outcome in mind. One thing that we did as churches in Minneapolis is we went after our new governor, and he just really just, we're not going to raise taxes, we got to, it's happening in every country in the United States, I mean every state in the U.S. And so we went in and said, we demand that you do this. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. I made a pledge, I'm not going to do it. And then we came in with another request, is can we meet with you again? Sure, you can meet with me again. And so I guess what I'm saying in that is, we knew starting off we weren't going to get Pawlenty to change his mind. But what we then decided, maybe what we could get out of it, was another meeting with him.
Well, and the other issue that comes to mind is, let's say I'm in the minority in a congregation on an issue. Do I ignore that issue? Do I look for another congregation where people are willing to engage that issue? I don't think that's the right way to go, necessarily.
No.
So...
I think that's highly generalizable, actually. I mean, to go back to her question before, you know, if you're a congregation where, let's say, roads or traffic congestion is the primary issue that makes people angry, which is, in fact, the case in a number of, you know, communities.
People can't get to our church.
No, they're just talking about the parking on the road. for their own community.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, but the point is, I think, I mean... You know, from a justice standpoint, it's a little hard to get too excited about that. So you could get your congregation potentially whipped up over, you know, transportation issues or road issues or local, you know, something like that, and spend 3 years working on it and maybe have a success. But what have you accomplished? And what, I mean, if you've got circumstances in your experience where that's been the case, where something sort of, you know, to kind of look at it from a generalizable perspective, but that's been the case. And what do you do with a congregation like that, where, as he said, you're in the minority, where what makes you angry is different from what makes a majority of the congregation, at least those that get angry about something, angry?
Let me deal with that. For a congregation to do an act of justice, you have to find those issues that have the most common ground. Otherwise, I think you'd just be kind of come like Don Quixote, chasing windmills. And so then, if you're so deeply passionate about something and you can't galvanize your congregation around it, then we need to go and be with people. Maybe it's a civic organization or something that's working on that. But so in terms of a congregation doing acts of justice, it's to find that common issue. But back to what, let me just finish this up. One action always leads to another. When a congregation or group of people feel empowered and see that they're able to do something, it moves them to do something bigger the next time. Simple illustration, I think I might have used this. My congregation, as we visited our neighbors, what concerned them most about our neighborhood was all the trash that the Capitol was leaving in our neighborhood. We felt like the dumping ground for the state of Minnesota. Is that letting the oppressed go free? No, but it was a way to finally get folks together to do something. And it was such an easy issue to win. We decided we needed to demand the state to put out a few more dumpsters, but it was very empowering. And then we went from there to traffic safety, which I think is a justice issue. When you see communities that are bordering ours who have every sort of state-of-the-art traffic thing to protect their children, but ours don't get it because we're the poor. For me, that's major justice. So you start with that which you can, and it will build to something else.
I was thinking kind of the same thing. You know, if we start with roads are being neglected, maybe under the umbrella of neglect, some other things. Maybe there's a playground in the poor section of town that's not being cared for at all.
And you also make connections with people that have power and that you learn how to...
I mean, I think this is... Let's talk about this, and then we got to go eat salmon. About the roads. Are all the roads in your county bad?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's true.
Are all the roads in your state bad?
No.
Why do you think that they're caring for some of the roads in your state but not yours? Why are yours being neglected?
It's county money that surfaces the roads.
I think it's deeper than that. Do you have powerful people living along your roads?
Probably.
I don't know.
Probably not.
I would imagine those people who have power in your state have some pretty darn nice roads. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you.